You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com, your official Major League Soccer show. And, of course, we are on YouTube as well. You can go there. You want to see an exclusive interview with a guy who runs Barcelona's midfield named Ivan Rakitic, whatever. It's not a big deal. It's just like us interviewing Ivan Rakitic. But outside of that, you can watch all of our shows there. So you can see all these beautiful faces. Charlie Davies normally has a Disney-based shirt on, so you can always get a vibe for that. Today, it's Toy Story. You got a friend. Don't,
you can't hate
me
on Toy Story.
No, never. I would never.
I think his Delaware connection just went off the grid.
Am I back?
You're back.
I was talking Buzz Lightyear. I was getting deep in Toy Story, and I lost.
Yeah, you can't hate on Toy Story. Like, it's just that.
So, Charlie, you've got kids now. What's your favorite new Pixar movie? Chris wants us to restart, but we shouldn't. Let's just keep going because this is fantastic.
Yes, this is good.
Yeah, favorite Pixar movie, new one, is Up. I love Up.
Oh, man, that's a crier. That's intense.
Yeah, it's intense.
Moana is good. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen it before. I saw it recently. It's a good one.
You're a Lin-Manuel stan.
Yeah, obviously.
Right? And like I said, I didn't even know he had written one of those songs. And like,
no, he wrote most of them.
Okay, but the one in particular, I forgetting the name of it.
I've been standing at the edge of the water.
That's what I can remember. You hear like the first three lines, and you're like, oh, this is Lin-Manuel Miranda, isn't it? 100%. Like, I remember watching that with my wife, and I stopped it. I was like, I bet you $1,000 that song is written by Lin-Manuel Miranda. Anyway.
That's why he's the armchair analyst. Put him in an armchair. He can analyze anything around. MLS Today, presented by AT&T, is on at 11 a.m. every single day. MLSsoccer.com, Twitter, and Facebook with Susanna Collins and Kaylin Carr. So you can watch that every day to get yourself going and review those 9 a.m. games when there are them. And MLS put out a press release to say COVID-19 testing for the last period in Orlando, 0 tests. So more good news as the tournament continues on, and we keep our fingers crossed and hope that continues. Let's talk soccer, though. Our first group that is completely wrapped up in MLS's back history is Group A, as NYCFC and Miami played a soccer game this morning. Just kidding. And NYCFC came away with a 1-0 win. So sitting on 3 points, they are still alive as a potential third place team, as Orlando and Philly have already clinched their spots as the top two with on 6 points going so far. Doyle, Maxi Morales played the last few minutes, but it was Medina in midfield once again to try and run the show for this team. No Eber in this one. NYCFC has only scored 2 goals, but they got a win in this one. Did you feel better about what they can look like under Ronnie Dyla?
Not really. I thought that, I mean, they played a 9 a.m. game without Maxi, who's their best player, and without Eber, who's their other best player. They struggled to create chances. Afterwards, I thought Dyla's quote was good. He said, this game, at this hour of the day, these games are not about playing beautiful soccer. They're about limiting your mistakes. And they did. And that was enough to get them the win. I actually thought they played better in the previous two games. They've just been sloppy, and they have made those mistakes. I am not particularly concerned about NYCFC. I do think it's clear that they're a step down from what they were through most of last season. But it's strange times in 2020, and I still believe this team has a ton of talent, and they deserve a chance to kind of gel and figure out as they go forward if they make the second round.
Charlie, two huge moments, though. Matrica getting an assist. He hasn't really been out there. He can be a huge part of this. And then the first touch from Tajiri Shradi to set up the goal was gorgeous. Those are two guys that if they can create and finish chances, those are two guys that are going to be influential.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Ronnie Dyla and what he has in front of him. It's a group of talented attackers. And trying to put the right pieces to the puzzle and get it right, it's difficult. Coming in fresh, it's not like he had years to prepare for with this team. Tajiri Shradi, Castellanos, Eber, figuring out the right combination, which guy goes where. Tajiri Shradi has to play. When he's fit, He is a quality player. And you saw with that first touch, there's not too many players in the league who can make that touch and then finish like he did. It was easy. It was cool. He was always in possession. He knew what he was going to do, but that first touch set him up. And that first touch is very difficult. The way he had to wait for it to drop, the patience, I loved it. But Matrica is that quality difference maker in the midfield, getting on the ball to see that pass one, to hit it. The way he can buzz around when he's sharp and bought into the system, that is a player that it will change the game for this New York City FC. We haven't seen him play too often, and we haven't seen him being 100% fit. So this team is unrecognizable when you compare him to their best New York City FC last year. But again, you need time, and they haven't had it. So I'm not in panic mode for this New York City FC team, although I am cautiously concerned.
Yeah.
Charlie's cautious concern is noted officially in the ledgers. I just want that to be out there. They will not know who they will face or if they've clinched a spot in the next round, at least for a couple more games. Sitting on 3 points, they're on that line. Anyone on 4 points at this place now is probably safe going through to the next round, especially on 5 points as a third place team as potential in Group C. But on 3 points, they're questionable. So we'll look to watch out for that. And obviously, that's one of the hard parts of being the first group out is you then got to wait and watch and wait and watch. One of the teams that did clinch their spot in the next round is MLS Cup reigning champions, the Seattle Sounders.
Wait, we're just going to skip over Miami in total?
Yeah, I think we made the assessment that they had like half their team there. They've never played a soccer game before. Juan Agudelo got red carded and had to start. Either of them were not good for them. I don't know which one was worse. And we will get back to them when...
When you say half their team's missing, which players besides Gonzalez Perez?
Leo Messi, Arturo Vidal, David Silva, LGP, Robbie Robinson, big one there. Of those five, he might be the biggest one.
I mean, I think Robbie Robinson has looked better than the other two forwards. So they missed him. LGP, we know, is going to help. And then Paul McDonough said there's a DP on the way and there's another TAM player on the way. I assume it's going to be a DP number 10 because they do lack midfield creativity and the, you know, a TAM number 8, someone who can sort of do off the ball, create a little bit of penetration because Ulloa and Trapp together, they're just so similar. It ends up being very static. I suspect that we're going to see a very different Inter Miami team the next time they take the pitch. Worth noting, they are the first team in MLS history to lose each of their first five games. Not even Chivas USA or RSL did that way back in the day.
Yeah, Nashville hasn't gotten a chance yet. So Nashville hasn't gotten it. Write that out.
But also, it should like all five games were by one goal. Like they haven't gotten blown out. They've had some bad luck. They played some good soccer in patches, but they do need a talent upgrade. And well, I think this made it clear.
When you say they need a 10, and we've heard that they've offered a contract to Vidal, where does he fit in to that midfield? And then if you do have David Silva who comes in, then obviously he's the 10. But if Vidal comes into that team, where does he fit?
Well, I think Vidal would be the 8, right? Vidal would be the box-to-box guy. You want to have a situation where he could just do whatever he decides he wants to do on the field. Almost like when Jermaine came to you guys in 2014. Like that's the idea. If they get Vidal, David Silva, you put him at the 10, you move Pizarro to one of the wings, probably left wing. And Pizarro's been good, by the way.
Yes.
Like
yes.
He hasn't been excellent. Like he hasn't been like, oh, this is an MVP caliber player, but he's been up for it on both sides of the ball.
But this is who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, with no help. He has no help. It's literally him on a solo mission when you look at this Inter Miami team. There is no other help. There's no attacking player just going to make him look even better than what he's doing.
Agreed. But just to say, when a guy's alone on a team and looks like an MVP candidate, it's what Nacho Piatti would do for Montreal.
Right.
There is that potential. That's not who Pizarro is. It's not who he's going to be. But I agree with you that he has played up to his level, which I think is worth the contract so far.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. I don't know. There's a lot of dollars and cents involved in that. But what I'm saying is this team, they've taken 5 losses and you can see why. But I think you can also see why nobody should be hitting the eject button just yet. There's like very clear path to upgrading it given what they have coming in over the next couple months.
So yeah, when we do a rundown meeting and Charlie says he doesn't want to talk about Inter Miami, this is what we mean, right?
No, well, like I thought you meant, do you want to get into how the game played out and they used a 4-2-3-1 in this one versus you just want to skip over the team entirely? Like they set a record today. Come
you
on.
You got to do something for me if you want to get in.
You're having a shocker.
No, I feel pretty good about my performance so far.
I know you do.
If you're going to drown in the shallow end, then I'm going to leave you there and I'm moving on. I'm going to the next one, which is Zion. Jordan Morris showing himself in this tournament, who he has become, Charlie. We're talking about a guy who is, mentioned Nacho Piatti, a legitimate game breaker, game in and game out in Major League Soccer.
I'm a huge fan of Jordan Morris and his game because he's just so aggressive. You know what you're getting from him. He's got power, pace, and can finish. He's gotten better with his finished product over the years. Now he's scoring goals when he gets the opportunity, when he's in front of goal. But he creates for other people as well. You saw on the ball where he plays Ladero across his body. I mean, there's not a lot of players who see that pass. He knew where he was going. I love the fact that what he adds to this team, and he creates for everyone else. He creates space. He's a deep threat. The first game, you saw them just sitting back, Seattle, not playing attractive football, just kind of being content, we'll just look to counter, not good enough. They don't get a result. The second game, they sat back, and then you're like, okay, let's see a little bit more. But you're still like, you lose to Chicago Fire. Not enough. It was not pretty. And this is a Seattle team who has too much talent, too many players who can change a game to be sitting back and not keeping possession. Then the last game, granted, it's against Vancouver, who are absolutely lifeless, but you saw a team looking to be on the front foot. The Seattle Sounders team needs to play on the front foot. They have too much talent, too much experience, too many players who can change the game to be sitting back and not keeping possession and dictating the tempo. Of course, there'll be times in a game where you can sit back and you release Jordan Morris into space and you're like, okay, we got our goal. Let's sit back again and keep the ball. Maybe guys are tired, you know, the heat, the climate, whatever. You have to play with those conditions. But Play a little bit more aggressive, play a little bit more attractive, an attractive style, because you have the players to do it. And we saw that at spurts against Vancouver.
It's exciting with Jordan Morris. It's not an MLS homegrown playing. It's an MLS homegrown leading. And as you said, pushing the team. Doyle against Chicago, Arriaga had the big mistake to give up the goal. He stays in the starting lineup. Shane O'Neill comes in over Yaimar. Were you surprised by that, as that was Brian Schmetzer's idea to how to shift things?
Well, Yaimar had a knock, I think it was, you know, it's pretty obvious at this point that O'Neill is at least third on the depth chart, and I think it's just as obvious that center back is an issue for the Sounders. It's not, it's very much not Chad Marshall and Kim Keehee, or Chad Marshall and Roman Torres, or even Roman Torres and Kim Keehee, which was good enough to win an MLS Cup last year. These guys are still trying to figure it all out, and it hasn't always been pretty, which goes to Charlie's point. That's a big reason why you want to stay on the front foot. You want to make the other team worry about their center backs, which they hadn't done in the first two games of this tournament. And it's kind of funny, right? Because it's the Sounders treating the group stage the way they treat the regular season. It's like the first third of it, they sleepwalk through. The second third of it, actively bad. And the third, you know, the final third of it, they set whoever they face on fire. Like, it's just classic Sounders. To get back to Jordan Morris for a second, he actually had a great quote last night after the game. He said, like, specifically talking about his evolution from a college forward, right? He was always playing in a two-forward system. Everybody thought he was going to be a number nine, and he's now a winger. And he said, after my injury, my mentality just changed. That position change has helped me evolve my game that way in terms of becoming a playmaker. And it's evident not just by the eye test, but by the numbers. In his last 36 games across all competitions for club and country, he has 18 goals and 16 assists. That is absurd. Like, that is, other than Carlos Vela, that's like all-time winger numbers in this league. And for him to go out and do that, you know, whether it's a game like this, which is a must win, or like he was doing it midweek games where nobody else on the Sounders attack was showing up, or, I mean, guys, mano a mano, he outplayed Alphonso Davies in what was a must-win game for Canada last year in the Nations League. He outplayed Alphonso Davies. He buried him. So Jordan Morris has been answering the bell every single week. And I got to say, he's a much better soccer player than I thought he ever was going to be. I thought he was just going to be pace and power and a knack for finishing on the break. And he has become much, much more than that.
It's been awesome to watch him develop and do his thing. The other side of that group, San Jose, locked up first place no matter what in the group with their 2-0 win over the Chicago Fire.
Did you talk about Vancouver at all?
No.
You keep just skipping over the losers here, David?
Do you want to do Vancouver now?
You can talk about Vancouver all you want.
I just think they're missing a lot of players, and they got a lot of stuff that they got to figure out.
Yeah,
that's all I got to say.
We were aware of that, Doyle, but thank you for throwing that in once again.
Well, you should say it, right? Their fans listen to this podcast too.
No, okay, true. We are about to talk about the whole group. San Jose winning. Chicago is still alive. They will play against Vancouver in the final game.
They're Chivas USA right now. That's how bad they are. They are poor.
You guys are having a shocker. You guys are out in left and right field right now.
I'm with you. I'm the one. I said there's no need to talk about them. But now, since you want to talk about them, we might as well talk about them and say how bad they are. So I don't like to talk about how bad teams are. I'd rather talk about the positive things that are going on.
So San Jose. Do you want to talk about San Jose then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead,
Charlie. That's a positive thing.
Yeah, I do. They've been able to do what they need to do to win the group. And I didn't have them win the group. I don't think anyone had them win the group. But when you look at the players that have stepped up on that San Jose roster, Jackson Yule, I think he's taken a whole nother step. I am so pleased with seeing his progress under Almeida. And it's not just dropping deep to get on the ball and playing the next ball to connect, because you're kind of free in a lot of instances because teams aren't really high pressing in this heat. No, he's getting forward. He's getting box to box. He's going out to the wings. He's combining. His first touch has been phenomenal. His awareness, knowing when to drop. He's also got stuck in. Jackson Yule is looking like a player who we're going to see on the U.S. Women's National Team quite a bit. And we're talking about all the players that the U.S. have, the youth that are playing in Europe right now. Jackson Yule is ready to make that step. He's showing me he's understanding the position and how to improve his game, because he's done that. He changes everything. He changes the complete dynamic of the San Jose team, because now you have a player who can connect balls from all over the pitch, get involved, combine. And Judson is there to obviously cover a ton of ground. He breaks up plays. He's active. And then Jackson Yule can find those spots to be that first player to relieve pressure. He's always an option. And when you have a player who's always looking to get on the ball, it makes everyone else's job easier. So he changes the dynamic of the San Jose team. And then you look at Espinoza, Andy Rios. I wasn't too high on him, but he just does a job. He like occupies, he holds, he's kind of busy. He can hold up the ball. I'm actually pleasantly surprised at the way that San Jose has played with the man on man and kind of isolating themselves, that it's worked out for them because of players like Jackson Yule who can kind of change the way that teams are kind of expected to play.
We should have seen it coming, at least to a degree, right? Because the knock on the man marking is that over the course of an entire season, it takes too much out of the players and it becomes something that you can scout. But over a tournament, it's like a secret weapon, because it's playing San Jose is unlike playing any other team in the league. And tournament play is where Almeida's teams absolutely thrived in Mexico and continentally. Like that, you basically couldn't prepare for that Chivas team. So even when they were out talented, they still had this way to beat you that nobody else has. And so this is a tournament, and so of course it's a secret weapon for them. And if you look at them, right, because of the, you know, carnival of errors they put on in that first half against Vancouver, like that colored the way we have talked about the Quakes. But the reality is they held Seattle without a single good look on goal. They gave up one nice goal to Ali Adnan, and then anything else Vancouver generated in that game just came from Seattle or San Jose's own mistakes. And then San Jose still had the firepower to get back in and to win that game. And then last night, they controlled everything against the Fire. And then when there was that moment to make that play, they had Yule to make the pass and then the Espinoza making the finish. And this is what it comes down to. for San Jose. It came down to this last year as well. Can Espinoza, Vaco, Shea Salinas score big goals? They did it through the first two-thirds of the year, right up until the end of July. And from August onwards, they got zero goals from their wingers. Wando was the only one who could score on that team. So if Espinoza is going to produce and Vaco or Shea Salinas are going to produce a little bit, this team's ceiling gets a lot higher. I still can't talk myself into a team with Rios and Wando as their center forwards in 2020 being like apex contenders in MLS. But like we've been wrong about the Quakes in the group stage, and maybe we'll keep being wrong all the way through the knockout rounds.
Wando keeps scoring goals, so we'll keep seeing what happens coming off the bench and getting another one.
They should put a body on that, man. He's got 160 goals, and nobody's within 6 yards of him.
I heard he's not that clean a finisher in the box, so you only got to worry about him outside of the 18. That's what they told me, if you want to talk about Chicago there, for a little bit.
I do want to talk about Chicago. I'm not as down on them as Charlie. I thought their performance against Seattle was really, really good. I think they have some very nice pieces. And I actually thought their performance against San Jose, even though they couldn't really put a foot on the ball and control things, like we've seen San Jose do that to the Sounders. We've seen them do that to other teams at times over the past year. So I'm less concerned about that than I am about the goal. Like Francisco Calvo follows Espinoza all the way out to the touchline, right? And then watches the ball and lets Espinoza come inside of him. And he's doing this all while staying two yards deeper than the rest of the back. Like, this is just such a fundamental, simple error by a veteran center back who's your captain. And then the second one, Sekulic and Calvo not communicating at all and letting a guy with 160 career goals have a completely clean look from 6 yards out. It's like, I don't think that I saw stuff that was structurally wrong with the Fire. They obviously have a lot of new pieces and trying to get together on the same page. But those individual errors, when you're trying to do that, become magnified. And that might be the issue for Chicago this year.
For me, it was like the 85 passes in the final third. Like,
yeah.
They were non-existent in the final third. And for me, that's a huge concern. And it goes back to, how do they play? How do they build up? How do they keep possession? They don't keep possession. That was kind of, you know, if you watch the Seattle goal, they lump it forward to Robert Berich to kind of start things off for them. And that allows you to play differently. It forces Seattle to play differently. But you can't play like that and consistently and get results. And it showed against San Jose.
They will play Vancouver Thursday morning, 9 a.m. to close out that group. Chicago, though, sitting on 3 points. So they've got a great opportunity, even with the draw, to get through. But with a win, they seal themselves second place, which means they play in second place from Group F. If they don't and Seattle stays in second place in Group F, and let's just say Portland doesn't get the result they'd want against LAFC, we could see a Cascadia Cup MLS is back quarterfinal game or round of 16, or I don't really know how to do that part. I haven't shifted my brain yet into the next round. So that's Group B. Let's take a look forward, though. Let's start talking Group C. Doyle, one of the breakout stars of this competition. Mm-hmm. We talk young Americans all the time and young Canadians, and this one's perfect because he's both. Ayo Akinola has been phenomenal in this competition. Did it in the first game, carried his team for most of the game against DC, did it again against Montreal, and scored in a few different ways, showing that he is a complete center forward. Actually, maybe this is for Charlie, because this is Charlie's world a little bit more. Charlie, you've been high on him for a while now. Mm-hmm. You talked about his improvement from minute one to minute 11 in that first game. Now you see him from game one to game two. Is this a guy who can lead this line for Toronto and they can win this whole competition on his back?
Absolutely. But you can't forget Piatti, the addition of Piatti and what he's meant to that midfield, and Pozuelo, the ability to see those runs and play the balls and connect is a whole nother facet of the game for Toronto FC. But Ayo, what he brings to the table is he's been able to watch Jozy Altidore in training for a year now, right? And he's watching him in training, how he moves, how he fits into the team, his hold-up play, what Jozy does that makes him successful. And Ayo has been able to add that to his game. What impressed me about him last year was his movement and he can finish. This tournament, what I've seen from Ayo Akinola is hold up play and then finding where the soft spot is on the defense. So he can get in between the lines. He showed in the first goal against DC United in the first game, his ability to find the between the lines, get the space, turn, and then fire near post. Not an easy goal. Made it look easy. And then in the second game where he had the hat trick is his movement going to the back post. The first goal that is crossed from Pozuelo, which finds him at the back post for a tap in. But then the third goal, using his body, the run first, then the second to use his body, and then the third is the chip over the keeper. I mean, it was phenomenal. Ayo has added all those attributes to his game, and he's still young. He's still growing. But to play with Piatti and Pozuelo underneath him makes it his job easier, because on his runs, they'll find him. And that's the key, is when he makes those crucial runs in between the lines or to stretch defenses, which also creates more space for Pozuelo and Piatti underneath, he's going to finish. That's where I've seen him grow, and that's why I'm getting hyped over watching a player like that, because I love young Americans who can finish, but also who can make those runs. Ah, he's Canadian, but he's also American. He played for the U.S. youth national team. So
yeah, but he's out here like in IGs about Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies.
Stop it. He's going to be a U.S. men's national team player. Ah, come on. Don't doubt it.
He was awesome. And it's funny, we talked, you know, in the first segment about Jordan Morris's evolution from center forward to winger. And now Ayo's gone the other way. If you remember back to my first experience watching him was with that 2017 US U-17 national team, the one with Sargent and Weah and Chris Dirk and James Sands. Ayo was the right winger on that team, and he struggled. Like, he was a ball stopper. He didn't quite see the pass, didn't quite have the technique to turn those moments where he was on the ball in good spots into goals. But over the past couple of years, they've worked really hard to turn him into a center forward. And they got buy-in from him, I think, at the start of last year. And they've weaponized it. Like, they've weaponized his ability to do all the things that Charlie said in terms of being strong on the ball and in terms of finding space. And it's a little bit reminiscent of, like, watching it, I had flashbacks to Pibe and the big dog and Roy Lassiter back in 1996. It seemed like anytime Carlos Valderrama was on the ball in central midfield, Roy was going to make that run. He was going to find the gap between the two center backs, or he was going to, you know, sneak in, you know, off the back shoulder. And you know that those through balls were going to be inch perfect. And that's what Alejandro Pozuelo has been. And, like, give a ton of credit to the playmaker here, right? Because Pozuelo is giving him layups. But in a lot of these instances, it's the run that makes the pass. And it's the recognition of, like, that first goal against Montreal, when the center back actually has to slide to his left, Ayo starts immediately drifting to the back post because he knows, okay, there is one spot where this turns into a goal. And that is exactly where he scored that goal from. So that early recognition is great. The one thing I need to see from him that we haven't seen, he does not make the near post run. There have been times over the past two games, again, it's a 180-minute sample size, so, like, we're getting deep in the weeds here, but, like, over the past two games, there have been chances for him to get to the near post, especially when your winger gets to the end line. As a number nine, you have to understand, like, okay, as this is unfolding, I have to feint back post, get the defender to bite, then cut across him and get to the near post. That's the Chicharito run. That's how Chicharito scored 100 goals in Europe. That's how you score as a kind of a fox in the box number nine against a packed in defense. So I do think that is the next step that we'll see from Ayo, hopefully. But from what we've seen in transition and on the break, what he's doing isn't just good. It's repeatable. He's scoring the type of goals that you can still keep scoring. Like, the banger against DC was awesome. He'll score that once a year. The tap-ins that he's getting, he'll score that every other week. And that's what's exciting.
Been cool to watch him do his thing. Charlie mentioned it. Piatti also, this was a flyer for them as a third DP. He's been good so far for them. Charlie, look forward for me, because Tuesday, 9 a.m., they play against New England. Neither team has actually clinched their spot yet. You have to think 4 points might be good enough. 5 points, 100%. So if it's a draw between the two of them, and whoever wins will clinch first place in the group. You've called both New England's games on the radio. They struggled to finish against DC in the last game. How do you see these two matching up?
Well, first off, you need to hope that Carlos Heel is healthy, because he came off in that game and reportedly had the same heel problem that he had that kept him out of the season to begin with. So you hope that he's good to go. I would assume that you're going to rest him regardless because of playing a lot of minutes in those first two games with the climate. You want him fresh for the knockout round. Both teams have to balance. I spoke with Dave Vandenberg today, the assistant coach for the Revolution, on the balance of winning the group versus versus resting players for the knockout round, because both clubs think 4 points is good enough to either advance in this group as one or two, or to advance as a third place team. So you want your players fresh for the knockout round. Bruce Arena has done it with World Cups, understanding how to advance, right? In this type of style, in this format in 2002.
You just lose to Poland. That's all you have to say.
Goal from South Korea.
Right.
But Duh.
Adam Buxa, it was huge for him to get that goal, that, you know, his second goal in four matches for New England Revolution. He's a player that's got to be a little bit more aggressive in the box with his runs, but he's brought in to score goals, not to create goals, not to shoot, you know, from distance, not to dribble players, just to be on the end of service when it comes from Pania, Gustavo Bo, or Carlos Heel. I think Christian Pania has been a little bit more effective because he's been direct when he gets the ball. Take players 1v1. He can beat you on the byline, or he can cut inside and shoot. And that's how they scored their goal against DC United. When he came in on his right foot, shot, deflected. Buxa taps in. Gustavo Bo has done everything but the last part, which is score the goal. His movement has been terrific. He's combined well with Carlos Heel in particular, but he's been missing the finishing part. He got the first goal against Montreal in the first match, but he keeps missing these quality chances. It's got to happen for him where you bang that first one or you get that opportunity. It's got to be on goal. And I think things will start to roll for them after that.
Doyle, DC Montreal, the other game, DC still alive, a win, they would clinch a spot. And Montreal still alive as well, because that's the beauty of that third team, third place team getting through, is you will get through on 3 points potentially. We already know NYCFC sitting on that. And of course, these games count for regular season. How do you expect that to play out? Do you see a little bit of a rebound coming from Montreal?
I hope so, because I think of the two teams, they've been the ones who have been more willing to be the protagonists and to be a little bit creative in how they approach the game. I have real questions about a lot of the decisions Thierry Henry is making in terms of personnel. I think that he's been overly conservative in terms of trying to stuff that central midfield with multiple D mids and playing Sam Piet as a wing back. And I think it hasn't worked. Like at this point, like you've got to simplify, but he's also behind the eight ball in terms of that roster. Like this, nobody saw this roster as a top tier roster heading into 2020. I don't think people saw DC United as a top-tier roster either, but DC United, like Julian Gressel, Edison Flores, Yamil Assad, that attacking three makes sense. Ola Kamara, or literally any forward, if you have those three guys behind you, makes sense. That defense, we know, was one of the best in the league last year in terms of goals allowed. Like, it feels like it should be clicking more than it has been. Like they should be able to use the ball a little bit more than they have been. At the same time, like who am I to criticize? They've gotten two draws against two playoff teams despite playing pretty poorly. So maybe Like they're in complete control of their own fate at this point. And like if you're going into a tournament group stage, complete control of your own fate is what you want heading into the final game.
That is so positive from you, Doyle. I'm proud, because if you call that football in any sense, what DC has done, Edison Flores doesn't even look like an international.
Yeah.
The way they play.
It's been gross, dude.
Gressel looks like he just came out of college. He hadn't been serving 10 plus assists to Joseph Martinez when he was in DC and scoring goals. The way DC plays makes these players look just plain. and original, and no, like they haven't had all this experience. That is the biggest concern to me, is the way they play with the players that they have as well. It's how do you have, you spend, you know, $5+ million on Edison Flores and he's not touching the ball in the attacking half.
Yeah.
But you got to let him flourish. You need to let him create and get on the ball. And the way they play is detrimental to Edison Flores, to
Gressel, Assad, Gressel, the entire attack. Yeah.
The whole team. And Ola Kamara is, he's lucky if he touches the ball twice a game.
So Charlie wasn't going to let them off the hook there. They still have an opportunity to clinch a place in the next round with a win. There's a chance that three teams in this group could be sitting on 5 points. All three of them would then clinch a spot. It would come down to wins, which they would be the same. And then it would come down to goal differential and then goals for to break them up. So Toronto, you'd think, would have the advantage because of all the goals they scored against Montreal in, you know, a classic basketball game that we've seen at MLS's back, which has been fun. We had questions about Sporting KC. Could they hang on to leads? Could they see games out? So they decided to one-up us, go up two players, up a goal, and then give up a lead on Friday night just to show that they could do it in more creative ways than we ever imagined. They will play RSL at 9 a.m. on Thursday. No, Wednesday. And the Colorado Rapids will play Minnesota in the final game of that group stage. Doyle, Pulido's looked good. And then the SKC stuff happens and they SKC all over it. They got a 3-2 win out of this one in the end, which should have been expected against a team that was two men down for chunks of this game, not just 5 minutes. What do you see when you see SKC in this competition?
Really fun attack, even though they haven't quite put it together in the final third. Like, Polito's been as good as advertised, but he's also has the shortcomings in terms of his movement in the box as advertised. Like, he's not a fox in the box type striker. And I think at times they do miss that, though. Kyrie Shelton's, like, the fact that he's doing stuff in terms of putting the ball in the back of the net has papered over it. The midfield, when they're on the ball, they move it really well. When this team is out of possession, they're vulnerable every single time. Every single time. And, you know, kind of banging the same drum for the past year and a half now. They have not figured out how to replace Aiko Parra. Puncic is the latest one. They went through Fontas and Botan Barath last year, and Graham Smith, I think, got a few minutes. Puncic now, and he has yet to be convincing. And then on top of that, like, Matt Beasler and Graham Zusi are all timers in this league, but they're both in their mid-30s, and they both look like they've lost a step, as has Ilya in front of them. So it's like, it's a problem for Sporting Kansas City. I talked myself into them being just like figuring it out this offseason because they have upgraded in a lot of spots. But through two games, and even back in March when they were winning games, they were still giving up a lot of chances. They haven't figured it out yet.
It's a little worrying. It'll be interesting to see what they have going forward. On the flip side, the other two teams in this group, RSL and Minnesota, that are sitting on 4 points. Charlie, I don't know that that was expected from a lot of people. They both had really good performances in game one. They seem to be a little bit content to maybe play to that 0-0 game. But as I think Doyle pointed out on social media, RSL is the only team not to concede a goal yet in this competition. They start two homegrowns.
They start three on the back line. Just to be clear, I got that wrong. Columbus also has not conceded yet.
Boom.
RSL and Columbus are the only two who have yet to concede.
But are you sold, Charlie, on either of these two teams? Do you think RSL gets a win over SKC to close out the group? Do you think Colorado comes back against Minnesota, or can Minnesota see it out and win the group?
I think Minnesota can see it out and win the group. I think they've defensively have been able to withstand pressure, considering they don't have Aiko Parra here, which has been impressive. I'm kind of shocked. They haven't had it attacking. Aaron Schoenfeld, who came in to start up top for Mason Toy, who didn't play, didn't register a shot on goal or a shot, period. So I think we'll see Luis Amaria come back into the fold and play. He's a little bit more active. I think he offers a little bit more. So they might have what they need to get a result and finish the top of the group. And then for Salt Lake, they've been probably the surprise of the tournament, because I don't think anyone expected them to get much out of the group. Albert Rusnak is a worry, of course, coming out in the 34th minute. But Corey Baird has been active for them. Damir Krylak has been, someone who is creating, shots, creating opportunities. And Everton Lewis is buzzed around the midfield. He's been a difference maker. But the defense of Donny Toya, Justin Glad, Marcelo Silva, Aaron Herrera, I never expected them to hold down the back with Zach McMath in goal, who has kind of resurrected his career with Salt Lake at the moment, being not making those mistakes that have hurt him in the past.
Yeah,
he's been a solid goalkeeper. So that has been quite the surprise and a pleasure to see that Salt Lake is finally putting it together. So I could see RSL advancing as the top team as well as Minnesota, but SKC have a lot of work to do in the back, like Doyle said.
So I came into this and I said I didn't see where the difference makers were for RSL, and RSL put out a pump-up video for their team in which me and Andrew Wiebe questioned RSL. So first of all, you're welcome, RSL, because we're here for RSL. But I would say this, you watch them play, you look at the game against the Red Bulls in the regular season, and you look at what they did, I think, for at least a half against Colorado, maybe about 60 minutes. When they're on, and what Freddy Juarez has done is 100% buy-in, and everyone seems to feel comfortable on the ball and comfortable taking space. And you mentioned Corey Baird. It's everyone. They move that front line. It's quick passing. It's quick ball movement. Anyone can whip across and anyone can make a run. And there's a cool opportunity, I think, to just say, sort of what San Jose did, but less gimmicky last year, of like just believing in guys and telling them that they are good enough and putting them together and saying, no one believes in us. And there is talent here and we're going to find ways to maximize it. And I think that's what they've done. A lot of guys who want to play in intricate, close spaces, want to link up with each other. And if Rusnak goes out and Miram can step in and give them some of what that is, and Douglas Martinez can find a goal somewhere, like this could be a team that really feels confident going into the next round. So they will close up, as I said, 9 a.m. Coming up against Sporting KC, and then the Colorado Rapids, who have been a bit of a disappointment so far because of kind of what's happened. I think for them, Doyle, it's been tournament soccer of just you get behind early, you're kind of chasing it, and maybe Danny Wilson just fell asleep. I can't even imagine that foul from him and just the ideas, and then you've got it from Rubio. It's been a lot of self-inflicted and maybe a little bit, I think, of a team that kind of knew their identity of we play at altitude, we're going to press you at home, maybe play against the ball and counter on the road. Then you go to a neutral site and they've kind of lost themselves.
Yeah, bad luck and just not being up for it at the start against RSL. RSL were all over them to the point where Colorado never even sniffed the game. So, okay, you're behind the eight ball in game one. Game two was different, though, because they got that golazo from Kellen Acosta right out the gates. And they, I'm not going to say they were in control of the game, but when you're in control of the score line, you should be able to lock things down at least a little bit. And they haven't been. They've looked vulnerable in a way that they didn't look throughout much of the second half of last season, certainly under Robin Fraser. I think Colorado's a good team. We all love Kai. You all know how I feel about Jonathan Lewis, and they've added some other pieces. And Kellen Acosta certainly has international caliber talent if he could bring it to bear for 90 minutes per week. But like, they're not so talented that they can go out and get results with anything less than an A level effort. Like they have to have that, and so far it hasn't. And then the other thing is, for as entertaining and fun as Colorado were last year under Connor Casey and Robin Fraser in open play, what differentiated them was they were the best team in MLS by miles on set pieces. They scored 20 set piece goals last year. The first two games of this season, they scored two set piece goals, which was the difference, for them. Like, if they've scored no set piece goals in these two games, and if that's going to be the case, then suddenly they become very ordinary, or maybe even a cut below ordinary. So they have to figure that out for game three, or else it'll be a really quick stay and really fast exit.
Won't have Jack Price serving them in because he used a bad word in the last game. Charlie, what do we call that to the Twins? What term do we use?
For what?
A no-no? What, a curse word? A bad word?
Yeah, just bad word.
Okay. We don't use bad words. Bad words are bad. So Jack Price got in trouble for that one. Danny Wilson, of course, spend it as well, whether that's good or bad. We'll be still to see. Let's move on into Group E, because this is one of the most interesting games coming up to close things out. We've got Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern time, FC Cincinnati against the New York Red Bulls. The winner clinches at least second place in this group and moves on. And the team that, if they draw, they probably both get through. Yep. And if you lose, you probably still have a shot going through. Charlie, let me say that again. FC Cincinnati playing New York Red Bulls with a chance to clinch second place in the group. My boy Frankie Amaya getting it done. He was awesome coming on MLS today on Saturday with myself and Dunny. Charlie, how did these two teams match up? Because the Red Bulls didn't make a single change from game one to game two, and they didn't have a single shot on goal in game two. So you have to think you're going to see some different pieces in game three.
Now, Cincinnati, all they need is a draw, realistically, to get through, which is mind-blowing, considering how they play, where they what they've had to face, new coach, injuries, Locadia, your star striker. But when it all is said and done, all they need is a draw. And the way New York Red Bull play and how they're aggressive, right, and they'll press – if Cincinnati can just sit, resist that pressure, and then use Joe Zhao to counter or you know, hit him on a counter with Kubo, and Frankie Amaya can have one of those long-distance shots, curlers that hits the back of the net, or they capitalize on a set piece, that's all that's needed. So they're in a good position right now because all they need is a draw. So they're going to welcome New York to come and press them, and then they're going to look to play long and try and get a corner kick, get a free kick, win a free kick, or just hope that Joe Zhao can break through, or Kubo or Reggaeton and get something out of it.
But let me ask this. So game one, they get blown away. And Doyle, you said it. You can't play CM DeYoung and Madunian in midfield, but Yapstam had never coached a game for this team before, so he tries it. Game two, he adjusts, and they were going to sit behind the ball and try and get a result and maybe build a little culture there. Game three, you have a chance to go through, but he's still trying things out. Mm-hmm. What type of buttons do you think Yapstam pushes for this one? How does he see this game in terms of, you know, his legacy or what he needs to do for the club?
Boy, that's a big question. I don't think that his legacy, it shouldn't hang on this game one way or another. But I think if I was a Cincinnati fan, I would like to see him kind of double down on what they did against Atlanta. You know that the Red Bulls are going to press you. When these teams met back in March, the Red Bulls, the first 20 minutes, emptied the tank pressing them and were all over them early. But you also know that the Red Bulls let you back into the game. So, you know, be smart about that. Weather the storm. Try to win your midfield battles, especially because the Red Bulls are playing with two central midfielders now. So if you can overwhelm them, that'll help. And use that to get out into transition. I think it is a good game for guys like Joe Zhao or Kubo, who can, you know, clearly run. Maybe Kakutamane gets back in as well. And if you're going to take a risk, I think it would probably be with your left wing back. I think maybe you say, okay, you know Kyle Duncan's going to go forward. You know that there's going to be space in behind him. So put Andrew Gutman out there. He's a good attacking player. Say, okay, cheat a little bit and try to get out on the break, because there's going to be at least two chances in this game where Madunian pings you a diagonal and you're able to slide the ball, you know, to the penalty spot for whether it's Zhao or Mane or Kubo or whoever happens to be playing up top. I think that's on the nitty gritty side. That's where it comes from. On the bigger picture side, you just want to see more defensive solidity, because this team just got overrun in that first group stage game when they actually tried to play. And it's not like they weren't giving up goals at the start of the season as well. They gave up 3 to the Red Bulls, 2 to Atlanta without Joseph. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, show that we have something in the back line that is, you know, repeatable week after week, and then hit them on the break.
The last game of the group will be Columbus against Atlanta. Columbus has already clinched their spot. They haven't given up a goal. They've arguably been the best team in the competition. No one could have seen that coming. No one on the show picked them to win the whole thing. Charlie picked Houston. Like, we were totally out to see.
I picked LAFC, and Houston was my dark horse. So don't try and switch things up here.
Fair. They will play against Atlanta, who needs every point they can get. Caleb Porter said coming into this, The group stage is the most important thing to us because those count as regular season results. I bet you that has changed with how well they've played, that they can win this whole thing, and he's got to see that, but he has to manage his roster. I would put easy money down that Darlington Nagbe starts this game. That guy could play day in and day out. He's playing against Atlanta. He's got to want it, but you have to think between Zellerion, maybe Zardes, Mensah, you maybe see some rotation in there as it doesn't matter as much for them. On the flip side, this is a must-win game for Atlanta. Charlie, what do you expect to see coming into this one?
Well, they do have depth. So when you talk about Artur probably coming back in, Pedro Santos, you had Sebastian Berhalter who played, Yunus Mukhtar who will probably get some minutes. We could see, you know, they rested. Harrison Affle didn't play. Milton Venezuela didn't play. These guys can all get Abubakar, Keita. All these guys can play and help you win games. It's not like all of a sudden you're going to have a huge drop off. So I expect them to play a lot of these guys. I mean, Pedro Santos played 67 minutes. Zellerion only played 57. So if any of those guys were going to come off, I think it's Zardes who's played a ton of minutes over the course of these two matches. And maybe you see Adi get a run out against Atlanta. And remember, this is not the Atlanta we're used to seeing. This isn't the LAFC, you know, a team that can hurt you with Joseph Martinez. This is a team that's sitting back. You have Adam John, who they've used up top. This is not the team that's going to hurt you. So you can afford to take a lot of those guys and rest them and get them some.
The truth of this, and what's wild is, you're saying, and no one would have said this a year ago, Columbus could go in third gear and probably win this game. Easily
get a result
against Atlanta. Yeah. That's where we're at right now. I want to get to LAFC, though, because you mentioned them. Charlie, the big game of the weekend, El Trafico, Chicharito not able to go at the last minute. Mm-hmm. But, of course, the Galaxy come out, take two leads because nothing makes sense anymore. And then Diego Rossi is the first player in MLS history to score four goals in a game twice. And he had four goals and an assist, which gives him five goals involved. And he is the only MLS player to do that twice as well. This guy's really good at soccer.
I must remind you.
Uh-oh.
I said, heading into the tournament, Bob Bradley...
We got to write these down.
Bob Bradley stated he was phenomenal in training, that he did not drop off. If anything, he got better after the four-month layoff, and that he was my MVP pick. So let's get that straight. Now, two... LAFC are just loaded with talent. You have BWP as a backup solution. That's your backup solution. When you have Brian Rodriguez, who's an international player with Uruguay, you have Eddie Atuesta in the midfield pulling the strings with Latif Blessing, who hasn't missed a beat, still getting all over the pitch, still breaking up plays, can still get forward and create. So you have those two guys. And then you have Diego Rossi. I mean, this team is complete. They're so good that you can have a Dejan Jakovic who has been around for a long time, is not a spring chicken, still look the part and play. Tristan Blackman, again, not a proven player in the back line, but they are so loaded up top and in the midfield that they can control the game and that they don't have to worry about having stellar center backs or backs because of their quality that they have when they attack. And Eddie Segura is quality. I'm not saying that he's not, but Diego Palacios, young, kind of still relatively unknown. Jakovic, older experience, and Tristan Blackman hasn't done enough. And then you throw in a new goalkeeper because Kenneth Vermeer hasn't been so stellar. Yet they're still the best team in MLS. what does that tell you? It tells you that they have quality and that they're well coached.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that. Like, their attacking quality, even without Carlos Vela, is off the charts. Like, they've scored 9 goals in 2 games without Carlos Vela. Granted, it was against Houston and it was against the Galaxy, two teams that I think we all would have pegged as below par defensively.
Yeah, but they're not Vancouver.
Yeah, they're not. Like, well, Vancouver did beat the Galaxy earlier this year, so. But it's look, it's fun to watch. We always talk about like, oh, I'd rather see a team that tries to win every game 5-4 instead of, you know, playing for the 1-0. Well, in a lot of ways, that's what LAFC are doing. I still question whether they're going to be the best team in the league because Jordan Morris at left wing going up against that right side of Dejan Djakovic and Tristan Blackman. I like Morris's chances to impact the game in a positive way in that situation. But I like LAFC's chances of putting goals on the board regardless. And it's, you know, all the players Charlie listed. Marc-Anthony Kay has been absolutely superb. Ginella coming off the bench. Cifuentes comes off the bench and immediately dimes a 40-yard through ball. It's ridiculous to watch this team go out and attack hell-bent for leather every single. I mean, that was a Mahrez goal from El Munir. He just hit it and it didn't move. And like David Bingham's like looking at it, expecting it to drift wide of the post. They have more attacking talent than any team in MLS history, mm-hmm. even without Carlos Vela. The question is, can they do it well enough on the other side of the ball? And I still think it's an open question.
Without question, they are the most entertaining team in MLS. Yeah. They try passes. They play in places that no one even thinks about. And it is so much fun to watch them do their thing. They did it against the LA Galaxy and they did it well, which maybe now starting to set the tone they thought they were going to set 2 or 3 years ago in this rivalry. But maybe it's now going forward. And they've got a lot to prove in this competition. They will face off against the Portland Timbers in the final game, probably the best game left in this group stage. But let's not have us talk about it. Let's talk to the man in the midfield himself for our AT&T call to the field. Portland Timbers starting central midfielder, Eric Williamson. Eric, how does it feel to hear that as your intro?
You know, amazing. It's been a couple years in the making to, you know, get to this point. And I think it's, you know, hearing that name and hearing that, you know, intro feels amazing.
Well, go ahead, Charles.
Well, I was going to say, you said it took you a couple years to get to this point. You only played 1 minute before this MLS Backers tournament started. You come through quarantine. Now you're starting in midfield and you're flying. What did you do from match two to the first match of the MLS Back tournament to get yourself fit and to hit the ground running?
I think a lot of it was, you know, right before the end of, you know, the season, the stoppage in the season was, you know, I had to get mentally prepared to, if I was to get my shot, I had to, you know, make sure I was ready then. And then right when it stopped, it, we had no timeline. So it was everything kept getting pushed back. So we knew, you know, right when we get started again, it's going to be full swing again. And, you know, maybe a month or two, but, you know, in a month or two, you have to push yourself to new levels. And I think, you know, as we're quarantined inside, we had our bike workouts, you know, it'd be, you know, 5 or 6 sets. And it's, you know, if I can push to go 8 or 9, then I think that's, you know, the extra step I needed to take. But, you know, once we were back outside, it was, you know, full swing in about a month. So a lot of it was, you know, credit to the fitness staff here in Portland. They pushed us to, you know, new levels to make sure that we were ready to go here in Orlando.
I've heard rumors it's a little something else, though. I've heard it's like these epic spike ball games between the squad, gets the competition, gets the juice going. Is this true? Is this how you're staying fit?
You know, to an extent, we have a lot of, you know, indoor games that, you know, we play. We have spike ball that we've been playing here as well that, you know, it's really competitive. I think throughout the entire organization, everyone's competitive where, you know, Gio will hop in and it's like, oh, okay, now I have time to finally beat Gio, you know?
So, yeah.
So, you know, it's just little games like that. I think, you know, the culture and the environment are around the team is just amazing.
Who's the number one in the club, though? Like, is Gio tops? Are you? What's your group?
I would say, you know, the young American group, you know, me, Chris Duvall, Jeremy, you know, we hold it down.
You know, gotta let people know.
Bill Tuloma's good at every sport, so you know he's one we're trying to bring into our little group. So
you have to take advantage anytime you can beat the coach. So if Gio's gonna step in, you gotta take advantage and give him the business.
You know, you gotta start off a little easy, you know, get his confidence up. Hammer him down right after that.
You have to be feeling pretty good. 2 matches, 2 starts, 2 wins. How do you feel different as a player now that you're playing with Chara, Blanco, Valeri in this midfield? What sets you apart?
You know, I think a lot of it is learning from them. I taking what I do best and learning, you know, what I need to do in order to help the team. You know, we call Char the Godfather because he's been in and around the organization for a long time, and he's a veteran in this league and probably one of the best defensive midfielders in the league. So I think taking, you know, his ideas, his concepts, and you know, translating that into my game, as well as Blanco, who's, you know, unreal attackingly, and, you know, Valeri as well. You know, you see it in the game. It's just he's a matter of, you know, he's always going forward. So it's, you know, he wants me to play into pockets. He wants me to, you know, challenge myself. And I think that, you know, learning from those three, as well as a few others that, you know, have helped me along the way, has been amazing. And it's, you know, translated well. I think I fit in next to Char. He does what he does best, and then I come in and bring in what I can. And I think it's, you know, translated very, very well and helped us win, you know, these two games and have us top of the group.
So let's talk about what you do well. Matt Doyle was in here a little bit, not for the interview, but he was pumped about this, about your runs out of midfield, how it's changed from three guys in Portland attack by themselves, or you whipping crosses, to now it feels more connected. You've added another threat. Is that something that you always knew you could bring to this team, or is that something Gio talked to you specifically about what you can add to be a useful starter?
I think it's opposite. I think Gio touches more on, you know, as an attacking player in the past, I'm naturally, you know, drawn to going forward. And I think it helps a lot when I see Jeremy with the ball, or, you know, Blanco with the ball. It's like, okay, I think it's time for me to, you know, join and help out. I know Charo will do his, you know, his role as a defensive midfielder, and, you know, he will clean up anything where if I'm not there. So it kind of helps out. And I think, you know, it's something I want to do. I want to be in the attack, but I want to defend as well. And I think that's where, you know, a good piece of me fitting in is, you know, I'm doing a little of both, and it's exciting, you know, playing with these guys. You know, it's one pass, and, you know, these guys going to potentially do the rest, or, you know, vice versa. So
how easy is it for you, or how much more comfortable do you feel when you're inserted into a lineup and you're playing next to Chara, you're playing next to Blanco, you're playing next to these guys who are the starters? You're not, it's not a coach giving you a chance next to all reserves who are looking to, you know, kind of play for themselves so they can get on the pitch with the first team. How has that benefited you playing next to some of these guys?
I think it's a major thing for me. I think, you know, if I make a mistake, it's not like, hey man, like, do better. We are all trying to get on the field. It's like, hey, this is the reality of how it is. If you make a mistake, you know, move on to the next one. And, you know, credit to those guys, you know, just being as competitive as they are. They're, you know, great humans at the end of the day, and they know that we all make mistakes. And, you know, if there's a mistake made or I do something right, they're gonna be the first to let me know that, hey, you know, either has to be better, or, you know, keep doing what you're doing. And I think, you know, playing alongside them, they are just as excited because it, you know, frees up some of the roles that, you know, they may have to take on. So
let's talk about your path, because it was unique, to say the least. Youth star, Maryland, but you're a DC Academy guy. Your rights get traded to Portland. You get there, and then you go on loan to Portugal, to Santa Clara. You don't appear in a game, then you come back, and you're part of the Timbers, too. Take me through that pathway. What was the Portugal experience? And was there ever a point where you just thought, this might not happen for me?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think growing up in DC and being around the group, I know, you know, growing up, and Charlie was there when I was in the DC Academy, or, you know, in and around the Academy. And it's, you know, seeing stars, you know, I met Eddie Johnson as a kid, and it's like, okay, these are bigger guys that, you know, have bigger names and, you know, had a successful career. And I think, you know, seeing that and training with them, it's like, okay, well, maybe it's time to take this up. And then I think, you know, when leaving Maryland, you know, getting right traded to Portland, I'm like, okay, you know, it's the next step, you know, ready to go, excited. And, you know, as everyone is, you know, very impatient, I kind of wanted to play right away. You know, I've been in a situation where I've played, you know, a lot of minutes for a lot of, you know, teams that I was on. And I think going to Portugal and not even playing in a minute, you know, I learned to train. I learned what it meant to be a professional, not in my own country, you know, not knowing the language. And it's just, it just created so many challenges that I think, you know, toughened me up a little bit, I would say. And coming back, it's just, I knew what I had to do. It's okay, now I'm back with the team that I'm originally with instead of being on loan. This is what I have to do. This is what I have to do to get in the lineup. And I think with Timbers 2, I just took what I needed to do with the first team into those games. And, you know, I think it's, you know, repetition, the experience of playing in professional games continue to help. And I think playing the end of last year, you know, it was the biggest test in my career so far. And I think, you know, did well. We ended up beating Kansas City at home at the end of the season. I think those games like that just kind of started shaping my experience and, you know, giving me the little experiences of, you know, hard games where you need 3 points in order to get in the playoffs. So
you're young. You just turned 23. You played two matches. You haven't played consecutive matches and started in your old professional career. How are you feeling with all the heat? How's the body recovered? And you have a tough one in LAFC next. So you got to be feeling 100%. How are you feeling?
You know, I feel great. You know, after the game, it's one of those like, hey, you know, I thought I'm getting older, but it's, you know, we still have the young energy where it's, you know, after the game, I just kind of wanted to continue to go. And, you know, after.
Oh, that feels nice.
Yeah. Maybe after, it's just kind of like, okay, well, we're all ready to go. And we all see the result after the game of, you know, LAFC beating Galaxy, you know, the way they did. And we know how talented of a group it is and, you know, what's at store for us. And I think, you know, we all want to win the group. We want to end on 9 points. So I think it's another competitive match where, you know, we're going to give it our all. And I think, you know, being able to, you know, come out earlier and, you know, rest for 20 minutes, if you would say, is massive. And I think it shows our depth and it shows how young of a group we are and, you know, where we are fitness wise. And, you know, I think we're just all ready to go. We're buzzing and just ready to go in training again. So
you mentioned 23 years old means you would be Olympic eligible. You still will be if it happens next year. You've started a U-20 World Cup for the U.S. Everyone's talking about this team. Charlie is so excited about this potential Olympic qualifying team. He went on a 25-minute rant last week when I asked for 3 minutes of the show. So have you thought about that, how you can get into that group? Have you talked to the other guys who are around that?
For sure. I think Jeremy is someone who was there in Mexico before it was shut down. And, you know, just knowing my competition and knowing who I have to, you know, compete against, I think it's a good step that I'm finally playing again. And, you know, I, not being a part of the 40-man roster, you know, it was a little hurt a little bit, but at the same time, you know, it gave me a little more
motivation.
Yeah, exactly. Just to, you know, just get back out there and just do whatever I can to make sure that, you know, I can continue just to push and get myself back into the group. You know, I want to represent this country, and I love playing for the country. I mean, being in the U-20 World Cup was unreal, and I think being able to play in the Olympics would be, you know, even better, you know, and it's the next step. And I just know that, you know, Greg and Jason are out there watching, and I think it's, you know, going out there and doing what I can do best and showing them, you know, if I deserve to be on the team or not.
So you just mentioned Greg Berhalter's there. He's watching. He's got his eye on everybody. He's watching how you train, how you recover, how you play. How are you going to play yourself into that national team, whether it's the Olympic team or the full men's national team camp in January? Because what I've seen from you already is that you're taking the initiative in midfield. You're breaking up plays, but you're two-way. You can also make runs in behind, the late runs that are hard to track as a midfielder. Where have you grown specifically that has allowed you to take that next jump in your game?
I think a lot of it is defensively. I think on the ball, it's been something I'm always comfortable with is, you know, beating players or just making the next pass. And I think, you know, being in the combined camp last June, I believe it was, and, you know, knowing Greg's system and knowing what he's asking for as a midfielder, it kind of gives me an idea, you know, to be in between lines, to break lines, to run through, you know, just things of those nature, I think, are always in the back of my mind when I'm playing, is knowing that, you know, he's watching, but knowing how beneficial those kind of ideas are during the game. And a lot of guys mentioned is that, you know, my ability to drop down and get the ball as a six, but also being in between lines, so, you know, turn and run at back lines is something that's good to have, you know, the flexibility of being able to play me as, you know, a double eight or have me as a double 10. I think it's a good, you know, thing and something that I'm pushing for in my career is being able to make sure I'm flexible. I'm versatile to be in different positions. And I, you know, I was a winger growing up, you know, I may not have the winger
capabilities
anymore, but you know, if that's something I have to take on as well, then, you know, that's another part of my game that I have to continue to work on.
Your job through two games has been to control possession, create chances. Not saying that won't be in the next game, but LAFC are the best midfield probably in the league. They dominate possession. They pass through the middle. They do different things with Kay and Atuesta and Blessing. What do you see going into that game? I'm sure you guys have already started talking about, you know, how can you break that up? How can you try and affect their attack a little bit?
You know, I think a main thing now is, you know, we want to be a team with the ball. And I think having multiple guys in there who want the ball, who can get in different positions, I think we'll start to question the LAFC midfield. I think they will start asking questions of how to defend it. And I think moving forward, it's going to be something where, you know, every game presents a different challenge. And I think LAFC is the biggest challenge we've had yet. And, you know, I feel confident that, you know, the midfield three that we have, we can really challenge LAFC's midfield. And, you know, we also have to deal with their wingers. And I think, you know, as a midfield group, if we can affect their wing progressions and their wing play, then it's just going to be a, you know, game that's going to be very interesting to watch. I know we're all excited for it, and I'm sure everyone else is as well. So,
Eric, the last game LAFC, all you need is a draw to win the group. How much will that play into the amount of changeover that we might see within the lineup and as well as the tactics, knowing that, you know, 0-0 is fine for us, 1-1, whatever we need to do just to advance, because it's a World Cup style. And obviously, these points do count towards the season, regular season. How are you anticipating this match going?
You know, I'm anticipating a bit of a change, but at the same time, knowing our depth, it's not going to be much of a change. You know, it's a team where we have guys who aren't in the lineup that should be starting. You know, we say it all the time, is that, you know, you can never tell the difference between our starting group and our second group in trainings, because it's just the level's so close. And I think being able to make that change, it's amazing to have, and I think there's going to be potential for a little change. But at the same time, knowing we want to go out, we want to win the group, we want to, you know, have another 3 points towards the season, I think it's going to be massive for us. And I think knowing the competitive nature of Gio, knowing the competitive nature of, you know, all the players as a whole, we're going to want to go out and win. You know, ideally, if, you know, we can say, hey, let's just draw so we can continue to stay on the group, we would say that. But I think at the end of the day, we just want to go out and win the game.
I know you're not coming out because you got fresh legs, so you're not being changed. That's no, good to know. Okay.
Ready to go. Ready to go.
Want to finish you on one last one. We've talked on the field. It's been awesome. But I know the Portland Timbers, every game you've come in with a warm-up on, with a list of names on the back, something that you as a team put together, and I know it's been put out there on social media to talk about. Can you tell fans what that's about and what you're hoping fans learn from it and take from it?
You know, a lot of it is different names. We have names from different generations, different time periods of times where they're, you know, whether it's police brutality or just, you know, racism as a whole. I think we wanted to display the message of knowing that it's just not a 2020 problem. It's not a problem from the 1990s. It's been, you know, the 1800s. It's been the 1900s, you know, just times where, you know, innocent black or African American, you know, people are being killed for no reason. And I think, you know, I wear the name of Emmett Till because it tells the story of, you know, in 3 years ago, a lady comes out and says that it didn't happen. And we wanted to tell the story. We wanted fans to research, you know, some of the names, whether they know them or not. It's just, you know, you need to know what's going on. And we just want to display this message. And, you know, a thing we did within the team is made sure that, you know, anyone wearing a name of someone who was brutally killed, or just make sure that they know their story and what's been going on in this country. And, you know, there's so much change that needs to be had. And, you know, being part of the BPC, I'm excited to see what's going to happen moving forward.
It's been exciting to see the next generation of young MLS players take over this battle and lead a little bit as well. We talked to Kai Kamara, and he talked about seeing Carlos Hermosa and Robin Fraser, and to him, and now to yourself and your teammates as well. It's been an honor to watch you guys do that, and we'll continue to push and fight alongside you as much as we can. It's been great watching you play as well. We've got an LAFC game coming up. That's the big one. That's what we've been waiting for, Eric. So I know you got like 12, 13 hours of sleep. You're allowed to go back to sleep. You've done your work for the day. You've done your ETR interview. We appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Awesome talking to Eric Williamson. So glad he was able to come on. So glad he's finally gotten the space to do his thing for the Portland Timbers. And he will be a part of history. It will be the final group stage game in the first ever MLS's back tournament against the against LAFC, of course, coming up on Thursday night. And Charlie, I was fascinated by one thing he said, which is the way we're playing right now, we're going to try and make LAFC's midfield adjust to us and the way we can control the ball. Do you think there's a chance the Timbers can carry this game, carry the bulk of play against LAFC?
I don't think LAFC are going to change the way they play. And when you have Atuesta, Latif Blessing, Mark Anthony Kay in the midfield, I don't know if anyone's going to be able to keep possession and make them chase the game. I think they just have a great understanding with each other. And it's going to be an important midfield battle, because if they do are able to sustain possession and win their 50-50 challenges and win those second balls, that's going to change the game drastically.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with that. I don't think that Portland's going to try to keep possession, though. I still, for as smooth as they've been at times in this tournament, I still think they're at their best when they're on the counter, when they are winning those 50-50 balls and just playing direct. And direct doesn't mean like hopeless long balls up the channel, but like, they're very good, whether like basically the entire Valerian Chara era, they've been very good at winning those balls and playing to feet and getting their creators in these kind of unusual pockets of space. And that is actually where LAFC happened to be pretty vulnerable. So I'm looking forward to it. Remember that Portland beat LAFC in LAFC last year in the Open Cup. They were able to counter them, and Bobasi scored a great goal. That would certainly help again in this one. And it is a huge challenge for Eric Williamson. He's had to fight hard for 4 years to win this job. And he's gotten it now. He's gotten his chance. He's played really well in two games. But when you have, like, Christian Paredes is on the bench. Christian Paredes is a full Paraguay international. When you have a guy like that behind you pushing for your job, you could lose your job as fast as you win it. So it's a huge challenge for him. It's a huge challenge for this Portland team, who's been playing, I think, much better soccer so far in this tournament than we saw at the start of the year and last year. I'm looking forward to it. It should be a legitimately great game.
King Jabo ascending to his throne, two goals in two games. The Timbers and LAFC have been fun to watch. This is going to be a phenomenal game to wrap everything up. We'll be back on Thursday before that game, but we won't have time to preview it because we won't be out before it. And then we get to talk about the next round, because we'll have an idea of what brackets look like. And we are going into the knockout stage of the MLS's back tournament. One game and you go home. And what we learned from the MLS playoffs last year is when you put MLS teams in a situation like that, no one has any idea what's going to happen.
Nobody's
safe. It is so much fun. So we assume a lot of 5-3 games, a lot of penalty kicks, maybe some double posts. Who knows what happens? It's been fun so far. It's going to be a really good week of action coming up for Charlie and Matt and myself. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great week.